It's right at the first bit of your book, in the kind of like the preamble, and you say, while our pre-wired emotional circuits were ideal for helping primitive man survive in the jungle, they're often poorly suited for making us happy and successful in modern society. What do you mean?
Well, I think the first thing is that a lot of people tend to think of our human brain as one great computer. I'm running in there. There's one of me and there's one of you.
Okay. I think I've lost you there. Oh dear. Do you know what? We're going to try and call you back on a better line, because I think it might be better. Because sometimes it works when we try it again. So right, I'm just going to keep talking to the band while we try that again. You were just saying, Nick, that this is something which you kind of think about, but not consciously.
Yeah, I mean, I think as you get older, you kind of think, well, how does your brain work? You know, those kind of things come into your mind. And when you're learning a new skill, you know, I try and, you know, like if I'm teaching youngsters, I try and, you know, explain to them that, you know, you're making a new connection in your brain. So when you're learning, say, like a new drum beat, if I was teaching a youngster on the drums and he can't quite do it, you keep practicing. And then once he can do it, then he's made like a new connection in his brain, so you can remember how to do it.
Mm. Yeah.
And I think, you know, when you learn an instrument, I think it's an important thing. You know, you learn all this, you know, finger memory, and it's all making, you know, new connections in your brain so you can do it the next time. And until you've gone over it so many times, until your brain's kind of realised what you're trying to achieve, and then it's like putting a switch on.
Well, he does describe
That's
parts.
That's how I feel.
He does describe parts in the book where he talks about somebody having Parkinson's, where obviously some functions don't work at all, but some of your thinking and your logic and everything else is all right there. There are no issues with it at all. And he says your different parts of your brain are different modules, and they work independently of each other. And there's a whole jumble over there because each module is talking and sending messages back and forth with each other.
Yeah, it's like when people have strokes as well. They train their brain, the parts, to mimic the functions of the bits they've lost. So
yeah,
it's an amazing thing, the brain. It can kind of reshuffle things and get things working again, even when bits have been destroyed.
Yeah, yeah, truly. Amazing to think that prehistoric man has basically enlarged his brain, and here we are.
Indeed.
Well, some of us, anyway. Yeah. All right, I think we're going to try. I'm just looking for a signal here from Darren. Ooh. Well, I don't know. Do you know what? I'm not sure we're going to be able to. Which would be terrible. I was so looking forward to
Interesting subject.
Yeah, I was looking forward to that.
Yeah. All right. Well, might give it a few more seconds. Anyway, you've actually been to New Zealand.
Yes, we have actually. Yeah, we had a lovely time actually. I think I ought to let you talk about it.
Thank you. Yeah, we went to New Zealand. We'd be out there sort of late November, early December, weren't we?
That's right, yeah.
Last year. And it was a bit chilly, actually, very English weather out there. But we stayed at a place called Paraparaumu with some friends, which is not far from Wellington on the North Island. And we toured around there, Lake Taupo, Rotorua, places like that. So we had a really good time.
All right, we're going to try and attempt to speak to Kerry Spackman again. Hi, Kerry, how are you doing?
Very good. I can hear you loud and clear. I hope you can hear me.
You sound so much better. It's almost like you're next door, but the next room is quite a long way away. So my question again to you, you're saying that we're just our emotional circuits, which we're born with. We've kind of evolved to be the modern human, and primitive man was fine in surviving in the jungle with those emotional circuits. But today, modern society, those emotional circuits don't help us to be happy and successful.
Yes, I think the most important point to start with in answer to your question is that I think most people tend to think of the human brain as one great big computer. In other words, there's one Kerry in there or one Jojo in there, but it's actually not how it works. If you look inside the human brain, it's got many different modules, and each of these modules has its own little agenda. And some of these modules buried deep inside the brain, particularly the emotional circuits, are very old parts of the human brain, and as you just said, they're more suited to sort of flight or fight in the jungle. And unfortunately, they have a huge impact on our behavior in modern society. And often they have an impact that we're not aware of. It's sort of unconscious. So these are the emotional circuits that are buried deep. They're unconscious, and yet they have a huge impact on us, and often negatively.
Mm.
And so an example might be, you know, here's a simple example. We might all know we shouldn't eat chocolate if we're trying to lose weight. That's a logical thing. We know that. Nobody ever got fat not knowing that they shouldn't eat, you know, 6 McDonald's burgers for dinner.
Sure.
The problem is we often want to eat these things because there's circuits in our brain that says, give us more sugar, give us more fat. So there's an example that in the old days, that was a great circuit to have because food was very short, and so we would go very put a lot of effort into finding that sort of food. But now in modern society, we're awash with fatty and sugary food, so it's not a good circuit. And in the same way, many things we do in our behavior, not just food, obviously, but our behavior in terms of work, relationships, and so on, are similarly poorly wired for modern society.
Mm. And I know what you talk about is something called, well, it's rules versus tools. And what you're saying is, like the chocolate, you know, we know the rule that, okay, if you want to lose weight, don't eat chocolate. But what you're saying is that a person is obviously going to fight the urge to go and want to eat some chocolate, and that's why you actually need a rule. Generally, a rule is something which you don't want to do. It's an imposition. And so what you're saying is you need the tools to rewire your brain. Is that right?
That's absolutely correct. And I sort of got into this when I was working with a Formula One driver, and you know, he'd been and read all these self-help books, and he said, look, I know everything, I just can't do it. And the sort of analogy I would use is, you know, most self-help books give you a set of rules to follow. Do this, do that. For example, 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. So, you know, in Formula One, for example, or in tennis, for example, you could say, let's do a similar book, 7 Rules for Beating Federer at Wimbledon.
I'd quite like that.
A great book. Yeah, quite like that. Okay, well, let's make up a rule. Rule number one, hit the ball where Federer can't get it.
Yeah, I can see your problem already.
It's going to win every time. If I hit the ball where Federer can't get it, I'm clearly going to win Wimbledon. But the question is, how do I do that? And so a lot of these books will tell you, be positive, have positive mental self-esteem and so on. All very good and well. How do you do it? The only way you can do it is not by having more rules and more things you've got to try and follow by discipline, but you need tools to help you.
Okay. And is it practice then when you're trying to rewire your brain? Because I'm assuming that you can do that. Is it mostly practice? How do you rewire a brain?
Well, that's a good question. And the answer is that you actually need a variety of tools depending on what you want to do. So, for example, a surgeon doesn't just have one tool. He doesn't just have a scalpel or whatever. You have a variety of tools available. And so sometimes what you want to do is you want to take some of these emotional circuits that are very powerful and very strong, and you want to connect them in a slightly different fashion to your normal behavior. And often that will require, for example, taking a person, putting them into a state of almost virtual reality where you have an opportunity to take emotions and feelings and connect them in a different way, in a way that's almost more real than real, so that when they are back in normal reality, they feel differently about things. It's a little bit hard to explain on the phone.
No, I think we get it. I think it's something to do with association. Something to do with association.
Yes, it is a little bit, yes. So if you can, you know, if you can associate a really powerful emotional feeling that you already have with a goal that you want to achieve or a change in behavior, it makes it so much easier than just trying to rely on a tool, on a rule.
Okay.
So there's a variety of ways you can do that, and it really is life-changing. I had a woman who was addicted to crystal methamphetamine. She had used it for 8 years, every single day for 8 years. Was a wealthy woman, had a very lovely family and everything. Obviously, being addicted to methamphetamine, she spiraled out of control. The police took her son off her. She ended up living in a tiny little box, effectively. But she really, really, really wanted to get off crystal meth, but couldn't do it, even though she was a very intelligent woman. And so what I had to do was find a way to link, in this case, her absolute love and adoration for her son with the evils of methamphetamine in a way that she hadn't had before.
Mm.
And that was able, and so 2 sessions with her, we were able to completely break that habit, and she's been drug-free for 2 years and actually just got her son back the other day from the court, so it was a wonderful result.
Well, that's good. That's brilliant. All right, well, my guests are definitely nodding their heads. We're listening to your talk, so we're certainly enjoying learning about this stuff. If you hang around for a couple of minutes, I'm going to play a bit of Bobby Darin, and then we're going to ask Kerry just a couple more questions about positive attitudes, emotions, and generally stress, you know, when people have a really bad day. So back with Kerry Spackman after Bobby Darin.
Every night I sit here by my window, staring at the lonely avenue, watching lovers holding hands and laughing, and thinking about the things we used to do. Like a walk in the park,
things.
Like a kiss in the dark,
things.
Like a sailboat ride,
yeah.
What about the night we cried? Things like a lover's vow, things that we don't do now. Thinking about the things we used to do. Memories are all I have to cling to,
cling to.
And heartaches are the friends I'm talking to. When I'm not thinking of just how much I loved you,
love you.
But I'm thinking about the things we used to do.
Thinking of things
like a walk in the park,
things.
Like a kiss in the dark,
things.
Like a sailboat ride,
yeah.
What about the night we cried? Things like a lover's vow, things that we don't do now. Thinking about the things we used to do. I still can hear the jukebox softly playing,
playing.
And the face I see each day belongs to you.
Belong to you.
Though there's not a single sound and there's nobody else around, well, it's just me thinking of the things we used to do.
Thinking of things
like a walk in the park, like a kiss in the dark,
things.
Like a sailboat ride,
yeah, yeah.
What about the night we cried? Things like a lover's vow, things that we don't do now. Thinking about the things we used to do. And the heartaches are the friends I'm talking to. You got me thinking about the things we used to do.
Bobby Darin and Things, 19 minutes past 11 o'clock, Tuesday night with me, Shoujo, till 1 here on BBC Radio Leeds, Sheffield, York and Humberside. Thank you to whoever this is, says, just to let you know, Shoujo, that heavy snow is falling in Midhope Stones near Sheffield tonight, so if you're driving in the area, please do take care. Thank you for those. All right, so let's get back to Dr. Kerry Spackman. He's in New Zealand, so do bear with us for the delay. He's a neuroscientist and his book's The Winner's Bible. He's been telling us about rewiring our brains, and during that song there, our Tuesday turn, Nick Stubbs was saying, and Kerry, you'll be interested in this, he was saying that you have a thing about calling people you don't know.
Yeah, I have like an emotional fear of when I'm trying to ring somebody that I've never spoken to before, I would rather not ring up, and I'll just say no, you know, I'll think about doing it, and then I have this emotional fear that's, it's like stepping off a cliff.
Yeah.
And what I'm saying is, I would, you know, rather me wife rang up, say, you know, I'll just kind of like, you know, happily not ring up.
Well, many people
and
do
then,
that. Yeah.
And then I'm annoyed because I want to. It's something important that I want to talk to somebody
there's
about.
No logic in it.
No.
No, there's not
and
nasty
like
to you
to
or
know
anything. Yeah.
How I can overcome that fear.
Helen's been giggling away. do you know what? And people have that fear about answer phones, don't they? So many people just really cringe when they have to leave you know, on an answer phone. I mean, well, I really enjoy talking to an answer phone. I'm like, brilliant.
Yeah, I don't mind that.
All right, let's talk to Kerry. This sounds very common to me, Kerry. What do you think?
Yes, these things can be often quite debilitating, and so the problem can be that you may need to talk to these people, these strangers, from time to time, and it may be important that you present well when you are talking to them, and the question is, how do you overcome that? And again, it's not just a matter of logic. It's no point saying, well, you know, it's just the person on the other end of the phone. There's no difference to anybody else. There is obviously a very good reason why this is happening. Now, unfortunately, I can't find that reason on the phone here from 23,000 kilometres away. And there will also be, what's really important, there will be a way of unlocking that. There'll be a way of connecting this fear, this problem, with another emotion that it'll just suddenly snap in a completely different direction. And it really is quite dramatic. And I have seen this so many times before with people I've worked with, even, you know, world-class athletes or coaches or and so on who know all the right things and have really battled with something for years. And you just allow them to see it a different way and feel it a different way, and suddenly they just go, I can't believe I've battled that so long. It's really quite amazing.
Are some people naturally more logical than they are emotional, and vice versa?
Oh, Jojo, I've busted you on my...
Oh, okay, I'll just ask that question again, and hopefully we've still got you. Are some people more logical than they are emotional? Oh, I think I've lost him. I think we've lost him. We're going to try him one more time. I'm going to play a bit of Whitesnake. If you've got any questions, I didn't think we'd get time for questions, but we are going to try him one more time because we've been looking forward to talking to him for a couple of days. Send it in and be quick, and we'll see. If we get him, great. If not, then, well, I don't know. Tell you what, forget rewiring brains. We'll have to rewire some technical stuff. White Snake, Is This Love? Okay, so back with Dr. Kerry Spackman. I'm going to try a different question just for luck right now. So, Kerry, let's say a person's having a bad day. They've hit somebody's car in the car park. They've got home to find a burst water pipe. They've locked themselves out. You know, why do some people seem to get stressed much more easily than other people? And can you do anything about it?
Yes, we can. I mean, first of all, it's important to realise that life does give us bad things. So I think it's not uncommon to have bad things happen in life, and it may in fact be appropriate to be stressful at times, because stress is an adaptive feature, can help you do things. So we shouldn't just expect to live life on a complete flat level plane. I think if we did, we wouldn't experience the richness and the texture of life. So I think that's important. But the second point what's important is that the stress doesn't go out of control and doesn't become dysfunctional and actually reduce your performance. So stress itself is not bad in itself. It's if it gets out of control and then starts reducing your performance. That's when you need to do something about it.
Mm. Are some people more logical than they are emotional?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, that's another very important point, is that everyone is wired very differently. So your brain is wired differently to mine, and you literally smell the world and you see the world differently to me. I mean, we all know we have different tastes in food, and that's because our brains and our taste buds are wired differently, and that's quite obvious. But the point is that carries on to all aspects of our personality. That's just a very easy one to see. So your a response to emotions or events could be vastly different to mine, and that's just how our genes produce us, and it's very different. I mean, the analogy would be, and this puts it into perspective how different our brains are. If you take dogs, certain dogs have a very kind, loving disposition, like a, Labrador, for example. Mm-hmm. Other dogs are very protective and vicious and so on. And that's just because of their genes. They're all dogs, and they've all got very similar brains. But just small changes to genes, you can breed these things into dogs. In a similar way, we all naturally hit the world slightly differently. Some of us are more like Alsatians and some of us are more like Labradors.
Yeah, brilliant. All right, thank you. Dr. Kerry Spackman, thank you for bearing with us as well, because the technology really let us down today. Normally doesn't. We expect everything to be perfect these days, but there you go. All right, well, great to speak to you. And we'll speak to you again. Speak to you sometime soon. There you go. It's called The Winner's Bible, by the way, and it's Dr. Kerry Spackman. Kerry with a K, K-E-R-R-Y, and Spackman, S-P-A-C-K-M-A-N. All right, we will get to... back to our Tuesday turn right after this, and they'll play us a song and talk a little bit about what we've learnt today, and also about going to New Zealand as well, because I've heard it is a beautiful country. Never been, but heard it's amazing.
I'm your friend, you can talk to me. I read your face, I see misery, because the one you love has left you dry. Better love.
Dr. Hook, better love next time. Back with our Tuesday turn here on The Late Show. It is Nick Stubbs. His wife Helen Stubbs is here. Martin Wharton is here with his flute. He's got his guitar out at the moment. He says it's not very expensive, but it does look very shiny and lovely. So there you go.
Looks can be deceptive.
Yeah. When you went to your trip to New Zealand, to Australia, you went to popped over to New Zealand as well.
Yes, we did.
That's got to be wonderful because we've seen the scenery in Lord of the Rings and everybody just says what an amazing place it is.
Yeah, I mean, we did actually go to where they filmed Rivendell, which was out of Lord of the Rings, which was really great to go there because it's, I mean, I love Lord of the Rings anyway, so it was just great to stand there and see where they'd built all these buildings and like in the forest.
Yeah.
But it's not there anymore. There's just a sign saying this is where they filmed Rivendell.
No elves then.
No, well, I was looking for them, but I didn't see any.
Yeah.
But it was great. Yeah, I mean, it's lovely countryside. Unfortunately, you know, we'd been in Australia and it was warmer there. So, of course, when we got to New Zealand, it was a little bit more like England. So, of course, it, you know, we thought, oh, we want to get back to Australia.
I've heard it's, you know, one person to 30 sheep or whatever, and it's very sparsely populated. Not much to do. Beautiful countryside, obviously, but not that much to do.
Yeah, I mean, it's very much like England, really. It's got really kind of rugged coastlines and lots of, like, you know, there'll be like a hurled tree that's on the beach that's been in the water for maybe months, and it's all the water's like carved it, and they just leave them there. So you get these branches that have all gone, like, as if they've been...
Yeah.
Wet and then they've changed shape and that's quite nice.
When I say not much to do, I mean I know about the extreme sports and the bungee jumping, but other than all of that,
yeah,
not many people around. And you were talking about confidence, Helen. You know when Kerry Spackman was telling us about rewiring our brains, you said you had an epiphany at some point.
Yeah, a couple of years ago, I started having singing lessons. And at the same time, I went on a four-day course, which was to do with sort of looking at how you manage people and how you manage yourself, mainly. And that four-day course sort of changed things around because it made you look at more about how you deal with your own situations. And then we started the singing lessons as well. That sort of helped me with confidence. And when I look back now in that sort of 2 years, the difference is quite amazing. But it's, we were saying about sort of before that